I still want to hold on to you because the first two questions I asked you is more on the practicality of things. But I still want to ask you a little bit more philosophical question, because looking at entrepreneurship, innovation normally comes with less regulation. We've seen this again and again from Silicon Valley to elsewhere. A lot of innovation can happen when there is little to no regulation. And with this in mind, do you think that while we think about corporate governance, while we think about sustainability, framework, regulations, regulators, and many others, this kind of impediment is going to affect companies moving forward and breaking through to new markets with new products and new services because of the regulatory need that they have to manage at the back end?
I think the role of regulation is a complicated issue, and it depends, and it's different across different countries and so on.
It can't be solved with a counting down clock.
I'll keep to the 1 minute. Here's my take on it. So in a textbook kind of example, yes, you can say, well, regulation might stop innovation and so on. Now, we're not in a textbook. We are in a world where we are already increasing the temperature of the planet, where the environment is suffering, the oceans are suffering, people are suffering. We have extreme poverty, inequality, destruction, in some cases, of the social cohesion. So we don't start with a neutral kind of textbook and say, okay, and the markets have failed. A lot of these externalities have not been priced into the system. That's precisely why we have problems like climate change. So how do you fix market failures? Well, some of these market failures are going to be resolved through regulation. But as I mentioned before, I think regulation is going to get you up to a point where you have the common best practices on sustainability, ethical, ESG issues. And from there on, I think it is going to be up to the best companies to see this as opportunities. Now, keep in mind, I mean, if you forget about this space entirely, if you forget about sustainability altogether, think about plain old innovation. Not all companies are innovative, only the best ones are, right? Or the ones that build organizational cultures, adopt practices, get the best human capital, and so on. I don't expect us to see anything different in the sustainability space. Not everyone is going to be an innovation leader on sustainability. Only the best companies will be. But as a society, we want to bring all of them at least to the bare minimum standards, and then give the space, if you like, for the best ones to innovate.
All right. I think that's very good, because I take your statement just now, we don't live in a textbook world, we live in a real world. Let's hear Anna explain how WWF is helping banks in achieving their sustainability goals. At least from there, we can see some concrete measures, and perhaps we can touch on some best practices that Dr. Ioannou was mentioning just now.
So that actually boils down to the question of impact, right? So why we're doing all this is just to have it's because we aim to have impact on the ground. So if you think about the supply chain and like the regional banks and global banks, so we are all financing the same supply chain. It's just in the global banks, they're financing more downstream part of the supply chain, while local banks are more looking after the upstream supply part of the supply chain. They are closer to the ground, to the companies in the region. So this is why we identified that actually engagement with regional banks is very important, because they not just, and we don't want to put them as a part of the problem, we actually see that positive. They should be a part of the solution, and they are the part of the solution to those regional issues, which is important for the regional supply chain as well as the global supply chain.
Just like how we debate on gender gap issues, we got to get the men involved, because they are, if not part of the problem, they have to be part of the solution in terms of solving gender issues, get all stakeholders together.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and we now see a lot of focus of actually NGOs and investors on banks, because there's understanding that it's not that we just need to focus on the companies on the ground, but actually we'll need to also look how those funds companies being financed. And the idea is not just to kind of blame the banks, but actually to build the capacity of banks, because those are the new issues. And we always need not to forget that banks, they don't sit on the ground. They cannot every day go and check the plantations and see what are the practices in the plantations. So this is actually about building very good relationship with your client, to understand your client, to see what issues your client is facing, and to actually have the tools and solutions to help your client to address those issues. It could be by pointing the attention of your client to those issues if the client have not yet thought about that, because those are actually real business risks, and we need to always think in mind that it's not only about doing good, but it's about your own resilience and economic stability and everything. Or actually, it's also discussion of the products, how we actually can leverage products, green financial solutions, to change those behaviors. And this is where the question of impact and metrics come? Because one thing is kind of you get the commitment of your client to change, to achieve that change in a while, but then how you ensure that this commitment actually translates to the input on the ground, kind of twofold. First of all, will your client actually do that? Because your loan can be disbursed by that time.
Yeah.
And also, even if your client can have a policy, but actually is there is impact on the ground. And this is where we also think, and this is how DoubleDBF supports banks, that's very important to actually leverage some tools. Because again, you cannot always refer on third-party assessment and engaging consultants. That's very expensive. But and well, luckily, to be in the world where actually technology is developing very fast, and we even already have some geospatial tools out there. And for example, World Resources Institute is doing amazing work on actually helping us to tackle the issue of deforestation through geospatial solutions. So this is where actually we see our role as an organization with a very science-based approach, and where we actually out the data and our approach is they really look at how the planetary boundaries are respected and if we are doing enough to align our portfolios with this sustainability, but sustainability being defined correctly, and how to give the banks practical solutions so that actually to get down those due diligence costs and make it a little bit simpler, but also to ensure that it does translate to the impact on the ground.
The similarity that I'm looking for this is, or the parallel that I'm looking for is something along the United Nations Development Sustainable Development Goals, where you have the United Nations across its various bodies, they share the 20 plus or 20 odd sustainable goals, and they provide tools and help these organizations that want to sustain themselves better. But do you think that that kind of model is working? Because Prof, as I was mentioning, I'm on one hand I'm extremely excited about the whole scorecard being created, but on the other hand, this whole self-regulation, I mean, if I don't tell my kids to and threaten them with mortal danger, they wouldn't brush their teeth, right? I mean, and they will just swing by the toilet and say, I'm done, I brushed my teeth already, when I know for a fact they haven't. That kind of policing has to happen real time. Do you think that banks can leave it to the advice of themselves and hopefully they'll self-regulate, at least in this kind of environment?
I mean, the answer is not so straightforward, yes and no. I think of course
all my questions are like that.
Yes, I mean, in the sense that ideally you want to make it mandatory for all banks, but not all banks are capable to do that immediately. I think there need to be a phased approach. For example, what we're doing is that one of the largest regional bank here, we have to co-develop the sustainability agenda, doing the benchmarking, conducting research, analyzing data and so on, for them to embrace the sustainability agenda in their whole banking practices. So similarly, to me, to make it happen, one key important element is to have the support of the board. The board must fully embrace the sustainability agenda. The stakeholders must embrace, as well as the employees and the regulators, of course. Now, for example, you cannot be expecting, say, for example, if the management wants to pursue SDGs, for example, mm-hmm. or VBI, but the board is not keen, at the end of the day, they'll be looking at dollars and cents at the end of the year. So you need one is to get the board to be fully supported. But to do that also, you need to have the nudge from the regulator, which means that regulator will say yes, we want to see something happen in the future, so banks would have to incorporate that. But again, not all banks are the same. The big banks are capable to do that. The smaller banks are not able to do that. So hence, you need to have those tools for them to do that. So that's why the document that came out today is part of the consultative documents for banks to go through and see how far they can implement this thing. Obviously, they need help. And especially in the context of Malaysia, just for example, in the earlier session, we talk about plantation sector, but there are other sectors in Malaysia as well. So for a bank in making financing and investment decision, plantation is just one sector. But apart from plantation, we talk about palm oil. We do have, to a certain extent, rubber plantation, sugarcane, and so on. So each of those sectors would require different set of analysis and evaluation. Moving forward, we also have other sectors, fisheries industries and so on. So which means that to fully implement VBI, the assessment framework, you have to go on and develop each of those sectors. And it takes time. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's why institutions like ours and WWF and the others come on board to help banks, because banks do not have the full set of expertise. They need to have help and support.
Let's talk about talent. I'm still on you, Prof. I want to focus on the kind of work that INSEF is currently doing in equipping your students, particularly those that are in direct industrial working relationship, not just undergrads, whatever, but focusing on impactful change that they can immediately roll out in their organizations from day one after leaving INSEF. Are there such plans, for instance, being inculcated in the curriculum of INSEF?
Yeah, I think what we're doing now is that we have just introduced what we call action learning, where students actually learn and become consultants to banks. For example, the project we are doing on the value-based, financing and investment framework is led by our professors, but some of the key works are done by our students. Meaning that they are fully exposed to those issues. So we have a project whereby, for example, students will be part of a team of consultants that will analyze companies' problem, banks' problems, and propose solutions. So meaning that what we have done is we have integrated the issues in the industry and put it inside our curriculum. So students from day one, they can start running after they graduate.
Dr. Yohanu, maybe you can share a little bit on your learnings from London Business School, particularly on how we can inculcate talent, capacity in terms of this topic today.
If you allow me a quick comment on your policing and teeth brushing comment earlier, I think we should be careful in this space of sustainability ESG not to set ourselves double standards or standards that are too high. And let me clarify what I mean by that. There is no financial metric that will tell you that a particular company is going to be perpetually profitable, always successful, and always a market leader. There's no one metric. In the same way that traditional financial investment will require you to monitor good management, to monitor implementation of strategy, to monitor everything, the financials every year and so on, it's the same thing. So we shouldn't be looking, I think, when we talk about sustainability or the VBI and so on, there's not gonna be one metric that tells you this company is sustainable forever. So that search for that metric is just wrong. Is there isn't, and there will not be such a metric. So the question is, can we build the corresponding institutional structures like that we have for financial reporting in order to get sustainability reporting up to that level where it's decision useful for investors and for stakeholders and for governments, right? Now, you asked about LBS. I think in my experience being there almost 10 years now, it's fascinating to see the new generations of students that come in and the changing attitudes towards the idea of purpose, personal as well as corporate purpose, the idea that I would like to work for companies that are fully aligned with what I would like to achieve and the positive impact that I would like to achieve in my life. So what we do, I'll give you one example. In our flagship MBA program, on the first week they are on campus, one of the first classes that they do is called Managing Responsibly. Right? It used to be the ethics, the CSR course, and so on, but now we have totally changed it, and the idea is as follows. In 5 sessions, they start from the ethics of the individual, decision-making at the level of the organization, in other words, strategy, big data, AI, and the ethics of data mining, judgment and gray zones in accounting, and from economics, we teach them everything that has to do with trust and building capital at the level of society. So right from the first week that they are on campus, they are thinking their career going forward, not only as managing a corporation in order to maximize shareholder value, but being responsible managers themselves. And that's exactly where we introduce them to a lot of the themes that we saw in today's conference about stakeholder management responsibility towards all the constituencies of the organization and a more long-term perspective. We have other programs as well. We devote courses to growing social enterprises and so on, but I would highlight this one in terms of setting the scene as soon as they enter the school about why they're there and the role of the corporation in society, which I think is a very strong symbolic and substantive step.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's just trying to set the mind frame or worldview correctly to ensure that everything they do is within that context of ensuring sustainability. We don't have much time left. In the final comments, Excuse me. In the final comments, I would like to draw upon the respective speakers' relationship of their own organization. We'll start with Anna. The WWF recently published the Sustainable Banking in ASEAN report for the second time in a row. How do you assess banks in ASEAN and how are they performing on ESG? And do you think that perhaps there are some key learnings that we can understand why you would assume that particular ranking of banks in ASEAN on ESG?
The report we are publishing, so this is like annual assessment of 34 banks in ASEAN on the ESG integration progress, and this is a project which is very dear to our heart because you can see how actually they are improving and how much progress we see. So I can clearly comment that in ASEAN we are past the stage where banks actually don't think that sustainability is something important for their strategies. As well, we are past the stage where they think that sustainability is about their own footprint, about their use of light, about their philanthropic activities or employee engagement. So they clearly understand that it's about their transactions, that's about their clients. So this is about what is in the bag and what are the risks in the bag. So what is also notably that compared to the last year, we only had 12 banks commenting that climate risk is a business issue. This year, it's actually already 19 banks commenting that climate risk is an issue. Overall, we see that, of course, everything is starting more from the process-driven disclosure. So banks, of course, now building up their internal processes, they're assigning responsibilities, getting buy-in from the board. Also incorporating that into the risk management processes, assigning responsibilities to free lines of defense. So those things are moving very well. Where we're still lacking is the disclosure of standards, what actually they understand under sustainability, what kind of requirements they have from their clients, and as well as very important thing, which is actually not even ASEAN banks, but if globally we do such assessments, this is something very new to banks. It's a portfolio level approach. And this is of course linked to that, the whole discussion of metrics, because of course for the financial disclosure, we had so many years, hundreds of years to stabilize those metrics on the portfolio level. This is very new discussion, but of course, if we look, having this helicopter view is very important because we don't want to create all these processes and procedures just for the sake of targeting 1% of your portfolio. In order to solve the problems, in order to make the portfolios resilient, we need scale. And to get to scale, we need portfolio level view.
All right, let's talk about scale. Professor, one question that was coming in is on, for instance, Bank Muamalat being the only financial institution in this country that has been accorded the Global Alliance by GABV. Do you think that, you know, on one hand it's a good step, but on the other hand, come on, we have so many banks in the country, how come there's only one admitted? Do we need to see more engagement in terms of this whole initiative? Do we need to get more banks and other partners and stakeholders from the various sectors and industries you mentioned just now on board on this effort?
See, we have this community of practitioners under the auspices of the Bank Negara Malaysia. We have all these seven banks out there, but the key players that help us and work with us to develop this document are two foreign banks, HSBC and Standard Chartered, and then we have two local banks, Bank Islam as well as the CIMB. I think what we are saying is that even banks, local banks, I'm not talking about the foreign banks, even local banks are embracing the sustainability agenda, the VBI. Although we may not call it sustainability, we call it value-based intermediation, they are yet almost the same. Meaning that what we do is that we look at through the lens of sustainability, but using the Sharia governance as a principle behind it. And so that will be the overarching umbrella. So we do have Islamic banks are implementing this. I mean, if you know, for example, quite recently the CIMB announced that, for example, if you go for financing for a hybrid car, you get a lower rate. This is part of the agenda to promote, you know, green environment, green technology in the country. So this means that there are things that bank can do rather immediately, you know, simple things that they can implement rather than waiting for having a new framework altogether. So, but what we see is that the local banks, Islamic banks, are generally fully on board in this. So now the question is to roll out, to guide them to implement this. So I don't see it's an issue. Of course, it will take time because Sharia governance would help them to implement this. So the key thing is also to bring the agenda of VBI inside the Sharia governance framework. To me, that would make it a much better way of implementing the thing.
All right, Dr. Ioannou, just a little bit of background, because we forced him to speak, considering that one of our panelists couldn't make it. And in a very small way of thanking you, maybe you would like to give your final words on the overall arcing statement that we've had in this forum. What would be your final comments following this regard?
Yeah, I think one thing I wanted to highlight as we're speaking about the sustainability space and the comparison with the speed of with financial reporting, I think one thing to note is the technology that we now have available in order to help us do this thing. So I'll give you an example. I work with a company in the UK called Tatamaran. Now, these guys develop an algorithm where it can do, of course, what no human can do. It can take 6,000 companies, read for 10 years their financial report, their sustainability report, and the SEC filing, and make sense out of it, right? So that's the degree of transparency, and that's the degree of which sustainability reporting can be used for decision-making, particularly by investors. So you say, well, it's self-regulation, it's self-reporting. Yes, but if you have a smart algorithm that can read it and understand it and compare it and benchmark it against the entire industry, or in this case, globally, then you can get information even from self-reports. We also see, we know that there exists software out there, right? That if you're the CEO, the top management of the organization, you can assign the collection of this data, you can actually assign responsibility. And trust me, the opportunities from there on are infinite, because this software can tell you, look, I would like to prepare a GRI compliant report. I would like to compare a UN SDG. And this, because the data is already in the software, it cuts down the cost and the time to produce these kinds of reports dramatically. Right. So again, that forcing into the enforcing the transparency issue. Secondly, accountability. If we're going to get to auditing of sustainability reports, imagine that this software keeps full record of who entered the number, where the number came from, and why is what's the justification behind the number. Now, imagine if we could we could link in that kind of software to an auditing software by auditors, right? Again, the speed at which sustainability reporting is moving, particularly because of the emergence of these new technologies, is truly fascinating and something to keep in mind. It might even be ahead of regulation sometimes.
All right, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for this for hearing us out to my panel. Thank you very much for having this discussion. Again, many thanks to Dr. Ioannis Ioannou of London Business School, Prof. Azmi Omar of INSEF, and Anna Batinkova of WWF. That's it. Thank you very much.